and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. With me today is my partner, Ryan Barnett. As you guys know, Revenue Rocket is the world premier growth strategy and M&A advisor for IT services companies. And today, Ryan, we're talking about AdBacks.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Thanks for having us on. And I want to say a quick thank you to our listeners here. We've had some great interactions the last few weeks that have helped us understand our audience a little bit better and where they are seeing pain or where they're seeing growth within the tech-enabled services business. So thank you to our listeners. And if you're new here today, we really dive into areas that are pretty specific to the mergers and acquisition process, as well as growth strategy tactics within tech-enabled services business. So application integration firms, application developers, managed service providers, and resellers, cybersecurity firms, and the like are really where our focus is. And as Mike mentioned, we'd love to talk a bit about AdBacks today. And to define this a little bit, when you take a look at your revenue and profit for a year, you typically are going to come up with the big calculation is revenue. That's just how many sales that you're going to have. And the second calculation really is typically what we're looking at is what we'd call adjusted EBITDA. And the adjustment is really what we're talking about today and how that matters to if you're a buyer and evaluating AdBacks, or B, if you're a seller and you're looking to potentially increase your profit by adding back some expenses that were one-time in nature. So, Mike, help us out. What's a common vernacular for AdBacks, and what are AdBacks in our industry?
Well, you know, typically when you do evaluation for a tech-enabled services business, it's built on a multiple of EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And as you can imagine, if you're a seller, you know, you want to optimize your EBITDA so that you can maximize your valuation. Now, oftentimes, if you're a small business owner, you may run things through your business, like discretionary expenses, to be more tax efficient, in short, to be able to have legitimate, you know, you have one-time expenses or legitimate business expenses, or that, you know, border on what I'll call owner benefit or personal benefit for the owners. And these are discretionary expenses that should someone buy your business, they would not continue. And a good example of that is, you know, let's say a car lease, right? A lot of our clients that run businesses, if it's a small, you know, a relatively small business, it is run as what's called a pass-through entity from a tax perspective. So it could be an LLC or an S corporation where your income passes through to your personal tax return. And as a result, in order to be tax efficient, you typically may add some of these owner benefit type expenses to your business. And those get added back to EBITDA and thus enhance your valuation. And so, like I said, a car lease might be a good example of one of those. There's other things that may, you know, some of the discretionary expenses around, you know, you may have, for example, a box or do some entertainment with clients, or you may legitimately have some expenses that maybe you do an offsite meeting with your board that, you know, also has some benefit for the owners. Some of those things as one-time or owner benefit type expenses get added back to EBITDA.
Yeah, I think that's a great start, Mike. Before we get too much into specifics, I just want to make sure that we understand a few tenets here. One, the expense in an ad back, for an adjusted ad back to your profit here. And again, this is really the only impact that this ad back has is on the valuation of the business. But if you look at this and you're taking net income and you're adding back your depreciation, well, the reason why you're adding that back is that you're typically going to have a cash-free, debt-free resolution, and you're going to extinguish that debt. So the depreciation that's with that you have been paying on get added back to that profit. So what we're talking about here is above and beyond that interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And we're looking at specific things that would really not continue after the transaction is closed. And I can't stress the criticality of that. If it's something that it was go is going to be done and will continue to be done after the transaction, if it's going to continue on, it cannot be considered an add back. And I'll give you an example here. If you have, let's say, a marketing team who has been executing okay, but perhaps not up to what you think, or maybe you even had a failed campaign, well, it's very likely that a firm will continue to have marketing investments in the future. So even though you may have had a bad campaign in the past, it's you can't a buyer is going to look at that with scrutiny. Because likely they're going to make marketing investments in the future. The same would be if you're running a business and you're the CEO of the business and you're leaving the firm, well, there's a good chance that you may have your whole salary as a as an add back, and it is you would no longer be contributing. But if another general manager is needed, you still have to account for some kind of a management. So the big thing here with a recurring or even repeat expenses in the future cannot be considered an add back. Anything to add on that, Mike, just on that premise?
No, I think you covered it well, Ryan.
Yeah. So if we dig into some categories, and this is something where as a seller, we think you should take a few liberties and at least understanding the categories of add backs. Some of them are very, very clear. One of them that we just mentioned really sits around that above market compensation for an owner. So oftentimes as a CEO, you may collect a salary, but if that salary is above what you would pay another CEO, the rest of that salary would be considered an add back. We see that it's an add back, a very, very clear add back that's accepted, I would say, almost every single time. The benefits that you might give yourself, the additional benefits that you may not have as a continuing person, the tax fringe benefits, any kind of above market contributions and the benefits, those are all pretty clear add backs and will get accepted most of the time. The other ones that are very clear are any kind of let's say you're going through a transaction and you used an advisor like Revenue Rocket. Anything that is considered within that the let's say a retainer period of the sale, that would actually all be contributed to a sale. So it literally pays to have an M&A advisor as that will get paid back at whatever the multiple of the EBITDA that you have. So any kind of expenses that are related to an M&A advisor. And sometimes we often see things like a coaching or management people involved that are above and beyond what may be considered quote unquote normal in a larger company that oftentimes sometimes gets back. So really start to look at who you're talking to and who you're using from an advisory standpoint. Mike, what about things like subscriptions? Let's say you use a marketing database and or you're using perhaps you have a research database that maybe borders on nice to have. How do you treat some of that for as far as an ad back?
Well, I think it's an important, it's an interesting question because the add backs that are perfectly clear are kind of easy to manage. It's where you get into the gray area that makes it tougher. I'll make one point on compensation too, just to tie this out. If you're paying yourself above market compensation and you're going to add that back, certainly that's a clear add back, but you should understand that if a buyer models your business with that change in compensation, that you shouldn't expect to be paid your previous salary or compensation level post-transaction if you're staying on. Likely, you're modeling your compensation that will be paid post-transaction because ultimately that was an add-back to EBITDA. So you need to be a little bit careful with how you manage above market compensation, particularly and most importantly, if it is your plan to sell in versus sell out and stay on post-transaction. And that's most important long-term. As far as things like subscriptions and club memberships and things that are somewhat gray, certainly I guess the best litmus test we always use, and you mentioned it earlier, Ryan, was, will this expense need to continue post-transaction? Yes or no? You need to make a decision, right? Is it fundamental to the way you run the business today, or is it simply a nice to have? And if it's a nice to have and it's not required to run and operate the business, then for certain you could assume that it would be in the benefit of the buyer and the seller to cut that expense moving forward post-transaction. And you would thus optimize profit. The buyer would get a faster return. I mean, all of those things seem to make sense. I think in many ways it has to do with the buyer, right? And their propensity to understand and feel whether or not this particular discretionary expense is needed, is actually needed. We've seen some sellers attempt to add back things that are core and fundamental to the business operation. And that's a real challenging thing to add back because you have to ask the question, if you didn't need it, then why did you not cut it while you were running the business and owning the business? And you have to make a justification for why you might not need that function in the business. So I think you have to be pragmatic about thinking about add backs like this and really ask, is this going to continue or does it need to continue post-transaction? And would it need to continue if you were a standalone entity? Because certainly buyers get synergy savings based on who they are, and those savings go to the buyer. So what I mean by that is, let's say you don't need as much back office support as maybe you have today as a standalone entity. Well, those synergies go to the buyer, right? Because they already have a back office that maybe could handle some of the workload. They're going to get that synergy. You can't say, hey, we're not going to need an accounting team or we're not going to need an operations team because once you buy our business, you're not going to need that. Well, not really. I mean, you can't add those things back because if you were a standalone entity, you sort of have to use the standalone entity lens to determine the efficacy of whether that expense could be cut or not on a go forward basis.
Yeah, I think that's a great stat. If you're a standalone, this is what you would spend. Now, the owner benefit does come into play, and some of this owner benefit might be things like we see a lot of people who will have children or spouses or family members in the business. If that family, it's advantageous from a tax perspective to do that. But if the family member is not continuing after perhaps you leave the business, that is something that could be considered an add back. Unless they are doing something critical path in which they have to be there if the business continues.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Some other things that you look at and, some add backs that we've seen more frequently lately have been rent changes. So many people have taken the advantage of reducing their rent expense as we move to more remote workforces. You can take a historical look back at what that rent may have done and how much that may change from going forward. You might see some utilities due to rent expirations. I mean, it's small, but you may see things like that, or non-recurring rent taxes. Those are things that are associated with not just the building or the rent itself, but anything around that. Mike, what about a potential add back on bonus programs for employees? We've seen a number of scenarios here, some of them, there's a little bit of a nuance here of if the bonus is for the executive or if the bonus for an employee. But can you walk us through a little bit what some of those bonus programs might look like in terms of an add back?
Yeah, I think, bonus programs for, the business across the board are challenging to cut and add back. I think senior executives might be a little an exception, but let's talk about them in more general terms. If people have come to rely upon a bonus program over a period of years in your business, and it's structured in a certain way, if a buyer were to eliminate that, that's seen as a pay cut, right? And generally, an employee has a lot of in their mind, they're concerned about, you moving their cheese if you're going to sell the business, and then ultimately have them have some unforeseen negative consequence, right? Everybody's sort of worried about that. Now, I don't, whether you're paying your employees over market or not, I don't know that bonuses and bonus programs are an appropriate add back across the board. And I would say you certainly could argue for people who are senior team members or partners, or maybe they've gotten a profit sharing plan in the business pursuant to their role. And, maybe they're going to get a portion of the buyout proceeds, or they're going to have some other benefit from playing that senior role in the business. It's possible that they could, be okay with a change or a cut to that bonus program. But I think in general, if this is part of compensation and it's part of how you align interests with your compensation plan, that, cutting bonuses and trying to put those into add backs to fluff up your EBITDA to enhance your valuation is probably a bad idea.
Yeah, I think that you're spot on. Same goes with if there's perhaps something that maybe unscrupulous behavior that was in the past that you found, or there, let's say you just did something wrong and someone they gave away $100,000 for the hardware where they shouldn't have. I mean, it's rare to see this, but it could happen. Is this something where if you have some mistakes in the business, is it possible for someone to take a look back and change or add some of that back to historical profit levels?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the short answer is it depends, right? It depends on the nature of that. You have to sort of look at the business and say, what is its historical run rate profitability, adjusted profitability? You could make an argument that, we stubbed our toe on this and it shouldn't have happened and thus we should add it back. But as a practical matter, a buyer would have the argument, but you did make that mistake and it did impact profit, right? And so if you didn't have the appropriate controls in place, too bad for you, right? I can't give you benefit for something that, you screwed up as it relates to looking at profitability. I think more importantly, however, is to look at what improved controls may be in place now so that doesn't occur again. And then beyond that, how do you, on a go-forward basis, look at realizing profit? Because any buyer is going to look hard at what is my return rate on this investment and what can I expect from a profitability perspective. So, to put the shoe kind of on the other foot, you could argue that, hey, this did impact profitability. We screwed it up. it's not going to impact profitability moving forward because we have changed either our process or our controls. And that is why we're forecasting EBITDA the way we are. And it may be incongruent with what has historically been in place. And then, you know, a buyer can take that into consideration when they're calculating their return rates on the investment and buying your business.
Okay, makes a ton of sense. And Mike, when you take a look at this, again, this is used to help understand the true profit of the firm. And it begs the question of valuations and valuation methodologies. How far back does someone need to go when they're considering some of these add backs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, 3 years is kind of a minimum window. I think 5 years is better. I think you should have an appropriate understanding of what is an add back is and what a discretionary, you know, what discretionary spending you were doing that is add backable. I know we're very clear, like when we do valuations and we're evaluating, you know, sellers on behalf of our buy side clients to, let sellers know what is considered appropriate, right? What is the guidance around what's in and what's out? Because without that, you know, the natural tendency is for sellers to throw everything in the kitchen sink in the add backs. To try to, you know, optimize EBITDA, but more importantly, they're not thinking of it like a buyer, right? If you're a seller, you've got to walk a mile in the buyer's shoes and say, you know, if I was buying this business, what would I want these guys to cut out and what would I not on the discretionary spending side? Because I got to run this thing, right? I need to be able to manage it and be effective with this business. And if I cut all the accounting staff and marketing staff and cut the sales team by half and, you know, cut compensation and eliminate bonuses and all this stuff that would be considered an overreach for an ad back, you wouldn't want to run that business. You wouldn't be able to run that business. So I think you need to be, you know, cognizant of that. Make sure that you're looking at it, you know, through that lens of, you know, the other person's perspective and, you know, 3 years is certainly a requirement. 5 would be preferred.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just a few more questions here. We get a lot of questions here. So it's one of those where if you're out there and this is something that you've been wondering about, it's worth a call with an advisor. But one of the views and questions or suggestions is that if you do have a lot of discretionary spending, and oftentimes this may sit on a credit card, be prepared to show documentation on how that was either a personal spend or that was a discretionary spending. Just having that proof and backup will make the process easier with buyers. The buyers may push back on any discretionary spending that you have. The other thing to consider here is what is the view of this compared to what the IRS might think of some of these discretionary spending? Are we kind of in two different worlds, Mike?
Well, I think the rules are pretty clear from the IRS perspective of what's allowed and what's not. And there's certainly been a lot of things that have gotten much more conservative from the IRS's view on what is considered an acceptable expense. So, for example, a lot of entertainment expenses have been eliminated as an applicable quote unquote write-off from a tax perspective. Now, that's different from what needs to be considered or what you might have done that would be a legitimate add back. Because it's just a different criteria, right? So, you know, if you spent money, legitimately spent corporate funds on something that won't continue, that was considered discretionary, you might not be able to write that off on your taxes, right? It may be something that, you know, whether it's appropriate or not, whether you tried to write it off or whether you're not, I would, you know, certainly talk to your tax accountant on what's legal and appropriate. But if it was done one way or another, it may still be an ad back. You know, and it may be a ad back that should occur, because the litmus test really is, will this cost need to occur, or will it occur post-transaction? Whether it was considered legitimate or not from a tax perspective isn't the question. It's more, will it occur post-transaction, or does it need to occur post-transaction in order to have a going concern? And generally, if the answer is no, then it can be added back. And so just keep in mind, these are kind of two different, you know, bars, hurdle rates or bars you got to get over, as it relates to, you know, scrutiny of the expense. And don't confuse the two, because oftentimes we see people that have made these discretionary expenses on behalf of the business. And you know, it is what it is, right? Whether or not they've been able to successful write off or not is really not our concern. It's much more about, you know, will it continue post-transaction or not?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for digging in there. And kind of last question, and we'll make it a little bit more fun, but has there been any crazy ad backs that you've seen, or something that was just made you scratch your head of, wow, that was included?
There's plenty of those. We've seen really interesting things in the past. Like, you know, we saw one guy who was trying to sell his business that he had actually showed a loss on the business, but he had loaded it up with expenses of luxury condos and cigarette boats and even escort services to the tune of about 15 grand a month on his American Express card. We can only guess what was involved with those escort services, but, you know, certainly there are people that run everything through their business, whether it's legitimate or not, and then try to kind of pull it back out. The challenge that brings up, and I think it's important to understand, is it creates a doubt in the minds of the buyer that you are doing things legitimately, legally, and above board, when you have all kinds of expenses run through the business. The optics of it are bad. And so I would just encourage you to, you know, run your business cleanly. And, you know, certainly some ad backs are happen in every deal. But to, you know, throw everything, including all your living expenses and multiple houses and boats and other professional services through is probably not appropriate.
That helps. That helps. If I was to summarize this up here, ad backs are important in an M&A transaction in looking at the valuation of your firm if you're selling it. They are one-time expenses, or perhaps better said, there are non-occurring expenses in the future. So they're not contributing to the business other than a one-time hit. So if you have a continuing expense, really it's not going to be an add back, and buyers would not include that in the calculation of EBITDA. You should take a look through your business and understand what add backs there are, and include them in profit. It matters, as most deals are based on a transaction or a multiple of EBITDA. And something like a $10,000 expense, well, if you're getting 8 times on your business, that's all of a sudden $80,000. You know, that's money. That's real money. That's something that you can do with, or you can distribute to your team. And there's a lot of reasons why you should take a very close look at your business in that regard. Keep in mind that you have to, if you have a salary that may be extinguished based on redundancy, that synergy is likely going to go to the buyer, and it's likely not going to be something that you can use as an ad back. So just because you might be losing, let's say, an executive or someone in the transaction, typically that's not going to be considered an ad back. That may go the same with any kind of program that you continue to invest in, but was not perhaps successful in the past. Buyers have a right to reject every every ad back that they look at. But sellers, again, really consider, take a deep look as it does, it comes down to really, granting you more money at the end. So, with that, I think, those are the big questions that I had. Mike, I'll let you, add anything else you'd like and do what you do.
Yeah, sounds good. I think, you know, ad backs are, sometimes shrouded in mystery, right? What's considered an ad back? What's considered not an ad back? What's legitimate? What's not? I would tell you that that's because, you know, they kind of are negotiable. Right? I don't want to make it sound like a Turkish bazaar here where, you know, everything is on the table, but, it is a situation where, you know, if you can make the case legitimately that these costs won't be, borne moving forward and that you could run the business as a standalone entity without them, then there's a pretty good likelihood you're going to be able to get that ad back. And so I think, you know, you have to sort of think through that and again, think through that lens. I would recommend that you talk to your M&A advisor or an M&A advisor about, you know, what is an appropriate ad back, what is defensible and what isn't. As you begin to think about your modeling around valuation, I think credible valuation, advisors, people that do valuations like, you know, we do here at Revenue Rocket, have seen all of this before and certainly can advise, you as a client, about, you know, what is appropriate and what is not and what is likely to stand up to the scrutiny, of a buyer in a situation like this. So with that, we'll plan to tie a ribbon on it, for this week's, podcast in the heat of almost July in Minnesota, having a stunning, run of beautiful weather here in Minnesota. And I hope, the same is, going on for you or wherever you call home. So, please tune in next week where we'll unpack, and explore, more, topics around, M&A and growth strategy for tech-enabled services companies. Thanks again for tuning in and make it a great week.